Hi folks, hope you're well. My name is Jim Carl. Welcome you to the latest podcast in the Banter team. This week, it's all about charities. Recorded at Banter at Bloom in the Phoenix Park in 2015, we spoke to Aidan Stacey, Head of Fundraising at Goal, Joan Freeman, Founder of Pieta House, and Marion Carl, CEO of the Ronald McDonald House Charity, about the current lie of the land in the charity sector.
Hi folks, welcome along to the final Banter at Bloom panel for today. My name is Jim Carroll. Thank you very much for coming out, and thank you very much for coming out of the rain as well. Our final panel today is called Charity Begins at Home. And what it is a look at the Irish charity sector in 2015 as things stand. So we've invited along three representatives from three charities you probably know about. On my immediate right, we have Joan Freeman. She's the founder of Pieta House. Next to her, Aidan Stacey. He's the head of fundraising at Goal. And finally, we've got Marion Carl, who's the CEO of the Ronald McDonald House Charity. Please give them a round of applause. Let's start with a bit of introductions. Marion, tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us a bit about the Ronald McDonald House.
Can I just start by saying I'd like to thank Dawn Meats very much for sponsoring the garden here. They're operating as premium butchers over here in the food hall, and they very kindly sponsored the garden for us here today, and we wouldn't be here if it wasn't for them. They're great supporters of us. We have a house in the grounds of Crumlin Hospital. We've been there for 10 years, and we look after families when their children are long-term ill in the hospital. So we provide accommodation, care, support. But the biggest thing we try and do is give them an environment where they can escape from the difficulty that is a hospital environment when their children are so, so ill. And our families stay with us for 6 months, for 12 months. We've even had families stay with us for over 2 years because their children are so ill. So we look after 20 families now. And our great big goal in the next few years is we're going to build a 50-bedroom Ronald McDonald House beside the new Children's Hospital when it opens in 2020. So we're looking at having to raise about 10 million to do this, and we don't get any government funding of any kind. So there's a lot of boxes that have to be rattled over the next few years so that we can do that. So that's okay. What we do.
Just in terms of the name, Marion, I mean, most people would associate Ronald McDonald with a certain fast food chain. Are they involved?
Of course they are, insofar as 40 years ago the charity was set up in the United States, and an individual whose child was very ill in hospital with leukemia said that he would do a fundraiser for the hospital, and the doctor in charge, Dr. Audrey Evans, says, "I'd love a house for families like you." So he approached McDonald's and asked them, would they get involved in the fundraising? And in America, even back 40, 50 years ago, CSR programs were what they did, and they got involved with helping in their local community. So they helped raise the funds for the first house, and the house became known as the Ronald McDonald House. They are still involved with the houses around the world. There are 347 houses in 60 countries around the world, and they support all of the events that we organise. But I'd love to tell you that they throw 10 million at me and that I can build a new house. That's not the case, because I don't think any company could afford to do that. But because of them, we have contacts with some of their suppliers that help us and support us, and they put our boxes in their restaurants. And the most amazing support comes from the McDonald's customers who put tuppences and fivepences and whatever into those boxes, and we can raise quite a lot of money through that. Our running costs are about 400,000 a year, and those boxes will help us raise in the region of about 300,000. So that is the support that we get through the system, but not directly funding us all the time.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Marion. Aidan, like, I mean, most people here will know of Goal because Goal are kind of a high-profile charity. But, like, I mean, knock it back. Like, go back to the start. I mean, what's the history of Goal? How long has it been around? And what's it kind of like? What's its kind of, I suppose, main areas of operation at the moment?
So Goal's been around 37 years now. And as you've said, many people know what we do. I suppose we're best renowned for our emergency work. So almost a month ago, we had an earthquake in Nepal. Within 48 hours, three of our staff were on the ground organizing to have shelter kits, hygiene kits dispersed to various villages and people there. So people are probably quite well aware of Goal's work in that emergency situation. The reason we took a garden at Goal at Bloom was to illustrate some of the other work we do. So if you get a chance this evening, just to have a quick look at the garden, it's an urban setting garden, and the idea is that many of the people that we're dealing with are living in these what you and I will call slums, what the sector calls informal settlements in cities where people are literally crammed together. And I've been lucky enough to have been in Freetown, to have been in Port-au-Prince in Haiti, where basically people are crammed in together in the most appalling conditions. And what GOAL try and do is provide water, sanitation, health programs, and to alleviate their suffering and to give them the opportunity to be the best people they can be in their situations. So as a fundraiser, working for GOAL is one of the easiest jobs in the world, because it's just so easy to get people talking and giving you money for the work we do, because it's an incredible privilege to be doing the work we do for GOAL.
Okay, excellent. Thank you very much, Aidan. And Joan, last but not least, tell us about Pieta House.
Pieta House is a service that looks after people who are suicidal or self-harming. We started off with, you know, four people working there in a little centre in Lucan, and now we have 10 centres across Ireland. We have 180 staff, and last year we saw over 5,000 people, children as young as 6 years of age to people in their 80s. So we're also looking across the water to New York. We're going to try and follow the Irish wherever they are. So we're hoping to open in New York in September.
Excellent. Okay. Thank you very much. As charities go, you know, you cover a broad spectrum: the international, Irish, new, well known, the whole lot. I mean, but one thing about the charity sector in Ireland the last couple of years is that every time people talk about charities, the word scandal was kind of put next to it in terms of rehab, in terms of CRC. Do you think, Aidan, that the charity sector has kind of moved out of that by now?
That's a good point. It's interesting enough. Most people probably wouldn't know that there's 20,000 charities in the country. And that in itself means that two or three charities over the last number of years have caused the whole sector to be viewed very negatively. Whereas the vast majority of charities that exist in Ireland are run very, very well and run with the highest levels of governance and accountability. So, for instance, in GOAL, we receive money from the US government, the British government, the Irish government, and the European Union. So those programs are audited to the very last level. We have an audit and risk committee, and we have a board in Ireland, a board in New York, and a board in London, all volunteers who oversee the governance of GOAL. So in terms of the sector as a whole, really what's happened is that the sector being tarnished by two or three people not following the rules as such. Trust is starting to come back. There was a survey done at Christmas by Fundraising Ireland, and it is starting to edge back up. But once trust is lost, it's very difficult to get back.
I mean, the harm that was done to the sector was quite severe. I mean, the Wheel reported that 60% of charities reported a detrimental drop in donations in 2014. I mean, that's a serious drop for a couple of bad apples.
It is, and it's compounded, though, by the feeling that recession was hitting everybody, so you had a combination of people that were charities were already finding it tough in terms of people giving that extra pound that they have. You know, where would they put that? Would they put it into charity? Would they treat themselves? Irish people are hugely generous and have been traditionally very supportive of many charities. So it was just really a case of another sector of society that we can't trust. So I think it was a combination of those two things.
Marianne? I'd just like to say is I think one of the things it did do was it made people sit and think, where is my money going when I'm giving it to a charity? And I think it was dreadful for all of us when we saw what happened, but I think what it's made the rest of us do is really sit down and examine exactly what we're doing with every single penny that the customers and the donors and the supporters give us. And I think it's making us a little bit stronger as well. So we have to have a good governance plan in place. Everything that we do is on our website. Our annual report is up there. Our financial report is up there. We have a board of governors who won't let us do anything unless we have this everything in place. And I'm sure we're not any different than a lot of charities. I think it was dreadful, but it has really tightened up things. And I think now people will feel a little bit safer about giving money to charity. And I think it's something that really is amazing in this country is the generosity of Irish people is extraordinary. Even when things were so bad in Ireland and people were really challenged every single day to try and get from A to B, they still put money in our buckets and they still supported what we were all doing. And I think it's really seriously good credit to you, because none of us would be where we are today if it wasn't for that generosity. So I would say thank you.
Joan, talk a little bit there about something Aidan said that struck me, that need to re-establish trust. Did you notice with Peter House that, like me and some of your long-term supporters, were a bit wary when all the scandals happened? And how do you as an organisation re-establish that trust?
Do you know, I was just actually going to say, we experience no negativity whatsoever. In fact, I suppose because we're a relatively new charity, we're only 9 years old, we've had our accounts on the website from year one. But the way that we looked at it, and Marion is right, you know, it made every single charity sit up. But I also like to look at it as when something is fractured, and the charity sector was fractured, it allowed light into the darkest areas. And I think that this will never happen again. This will never be allowed to happen again. And with the new Charity Act and all that's happening now, we are now in another chapter in Irish life.
And like you, both of you, Marion and Aidan, talked about the generosity of Irish people. And obviously, we've been through kind of like, I mean, we had the Celtic Tiger years, then we had the recession years, and now we have this alleged boom again. So, I mean, maybe all three of you, can you talk a bit about, like, how did you notice your donations kind of ebbing and flowing as the economic recession kicked in? Or was it a case that things were always on an even keel all the way through?
I'll start. What we noticed when the recession hit was that the suicide rates went up immediately. Not only amongst the construction industry, but also our farmers. And when people saw what we were trying to achieve, that we were trying to save lives, the donations kept coming in. And we are, it's 5 million euro to run Pieta House, the 10 centres. We get 500,000 from the government. The rest is from people like here.
Marion?
I think, you know, we're a much smaller organisation. Probably we wouldn't have the same appeal, because really the only people that know about us are families whose children are long-term ill and have to stay in Crumlin Hospital. So most people don't know about the Ronald McDonald House until they have to go to hospital. Our biggest supporters over our last 10 years have been our families. They know what it's like to stay in the house. They know what benefits there were. So they go home to their own communities and they do fundraisers. And because it's an individual who has benefited from the facilities that we can offer, they've managed to just keep that interest alive. So in the 10 years, we've had over 2,600 families stay with us from every county in Ireland except Armagh, and all of those families go and do some fundraising for us. So although things got very difficult, because the individual who used the facility went back to their community, they were able to keep that money flowing in for us, and that's really where the difference is. And I think it's a point that Aidan made as well, like 20,000 charities. It's a huge number of charities, but each one of them do an amazing job, and they address a particular issue that there might be in Ireland at any given time. So if you think of spreading all of the Irish people around all of those 20,000 charities, that support is quite incredible. And I think, yes, it wavered for a bit in the middle, but you know, but they're back. There's no doubt about it. They're back with great enthusiasm, and they're supporting the work that we all do, no matter what it is.
I mean, would it be the case with gold then, Aidan, that the donations would ebb and flow depending on what emergency was in the news?
Yeah, so between 2008 and 2012, the international aid sector, the income from Irish donors dropped by 35%, and gold was a little worse off than that, but each year you can have a huge variance. So while the crisis with CRC and rehab was happening, the Philippines cyclone had happened, and gold's income was shooting through the roof because we were responding there as well. So you get that odd anomaly where the international aid charities did very well in the month of December 2013, and other charities were feeling a crunch. So you get a very mixed bag.
I mean, when it comes to raising awareness and raising donations, I mean, with Pieta House, you've got Darkness Into Light. I mean, that's been a huge success. Like, maybe talk a little bit about, the impetus behind that and where the idea came from and how it's developed.
The idea came from, I robbed it from an American charity. There was something similar in Boston about 15 years ago. They had an overnight walk. In fact, it was 17 miles. overnight and overnight and part of the next day, which is far too long, obviously. So we came up with the idea of having a dawn walk, a pre-dawn walk, that would be 5K that could involve children as well. And this time, 7 years ago, here in the Phoenix Park, 400 people turned up for the very first time. This year, 120,000 people walked across our country. And so it, not only is it obviously a flagship fundraiser, but it's just extraordinary how people want to do this. They are, they're the voice of Pieter. They're the ones who are shouting that we have to do something about suicide. Yeah. And it's such an honour and privilege being in the Phoenix Park every year and just seeing these vast numbers. And I get terrified every time. And I get even more terrified when I have to speak. And I want to do nothing but hide behind a tree, which I did do 1 year, because I saw all these cars coming in. But it's such a wonderful experience. And I think now people are doing, not just because of suicide, not just because they know someone coming to Pieter, but because they want to experience what it's like to get up and walk at 4 o'clock in the morning and then meet for breakfast. Yeah. That's what it's turned into.
Yeah. In terms of kind of other fundraising initiatives then, me and Marion and Aidan, I mean, obviously with Goal, I know the Goal Mile. Are there other things year on year that like bring in donations and bring in profile? Are you always on the lookout for new ideas? And like, are there people coming to you with ideas for fundraising drives or fundraising initiatives that you often turn down for various reasons?
Well, firstly, by far and away the best fundraising in the country is Darkness and Delight. It is by far and away the best event, you know, hands down.
We're all very envious.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You all wish you'd stolen the same idea for the charity. Yeah.
So we have a number of events. Gold Mile has been going over 30 years now, and again, similar sense of that. I had my first Gold Mile as a head of fundraising last Christmas, and just the atmosphere in Irishtown was just amazing. Just people positive, and the money coming in was extraordinary. And again, run by volunteers all around the country, not very heavily involved from our point of view, so hugely beneficial. And we have Jersey Day, and we have a number of other events. And this year, our own team came up with a Duvet Day, which is a raffle amongst corporates. And that was taken up by 100 companies this year, and we raised 37,000 euros this year so far. So it's that idea of trying to always be a little bit creative about what you can do. The odd time we will get a very enthusiastic musician who wants to do a single for us, and that's a real difficult one because you're in a situation where they're expecting you to necessarily take that single on and launch it for you. Sometimes that can work. A particular individual did a gig for us instead, and that was hugely beneficial. But it's a difficult balance. Sometimes the people's enthusiasm is driven by their complete belief in their own music. And in my past, not in Goal, but in my past, I've dealt with some individuals and their music wasn't quite as good as they thought it was.
Well, I mean, my background is music, and I can tell you for a fact that the thing that makes every single live promoter or venue owner or venue booker shudder and scream and groan is the idea of a charity gig. Because, I mean, there's been some people seem to think that putting on a charity gig is a no-brainer. And in fact, it's just so hard to draw people in, you know. Just because you're doing it for a charity doesn't mean you're going to fill the room, you know. Mm-hmm. And the other part of the question then, like, for you, Marion, is like, to have people approach you with ideas for fundraising that you've been kind of like, that you've had to, politely turned down.
I never turn anybody down that wants to raise money for the Ronald McDonald House. And, you know, we have, because we've had so many families, it's really our families that do the major fundraising for us. And they'll do anything from a cake sale to a walk to a weekend. We had a family who stayed with us from Abbey, and they organised a whole weekend and raised something like 20,000 over the weekend. And, you know, I'd never say no. Now, of course, we have to be careful and we have to vet everything, and we always do that because it's very important that some crook doesn't come along and do something in our name and then raise all that money and pocket it. And that's where the good governance comes in. We watch everything. They have to run through everything they're doing with us. We have a form that they have to fill out where they sign over that they will give us the money. And really, you can't deny people's own willingness and enthusiasm to do something because they want to do it. It's much easier than going out and trying to make somebody raise money for you. And I don't think you can do it any better than having people who actually have used your facilities wanting to raise money for you. So no, we keep an eye on them very closely, but no, we never say no to anybody.
Okay. Well, what about the other area of fundraising that's been quite contentious in recent years, of chugging? I mean, are any of your organizations involved with that? Or were involved with that?
Yes, we are currently doing it out in the back garden at the moment. And the reason we're doing it is it's been proven as the most cost effective and the most resilient. So, for instance, when I said to you about the international aid income dropping by 35% from 2008 to 2012, those charities that had standing orders or direct debits, that income remained significantly higher than the drop, because people, once they had established the standing order and had the money coming out, they said, well, I can keep it going, even though. Now, some standing orders dropped away, or some direct debits dropped away, but the vast majority of people kept those going. So it's a very valuable source of income, and it's consistent, which means you can plan.
Right. And in terms of aid and stay-off, kind of like, I mean, the people who get on the street, who get people to sign up to those monthly standing orders and direct debits for goal. I mean, like, a lot of chuggers are quite aggressive and quite rude, and like it's given the sector a bad name. Do you vet them, or is this outsourced to another organisation?
Well, we actually don't do the street. We have a vent and door to door. And again, of course, we vet them thoroughly, and they need to know the business very well. But that's just bad for business. That there's no way going around that. That if somebody's doing that on your behalf, it just doesn't work. So it's pointless.
Yeah, I mean, both you, Joan, and Marion, you immediately kind of like shook your heads there. Is the idea of kind of like that sort of like aggressive, in your face, like on the street approach, something that's completely, is it a personal experience that's turned you off it, or do you just don't think it's going to bring in the numbers?
I think it's rude, first of all, and I would not want anybody to represent Pieta House and approach anyone like that, even at the door. You know, even we don't do door to door or anything like that. I can understand why Aidan's charity wants it, but we don't want to do that. But at the same time, you have to realise that people, as you said, there are 20,000 charities. So there's 20,000 charities trying for the same few bob. Yeah. You know, but one other thing, if you don't mind, Jim, I'd like to say. This country would not be where it is today except for these charities. Just imagine what would happen if there was no Vincent de Paul. What would happen at Christmas, you know? And if you think of Goal, where would these other countries be? And those families that my own sister had to lie on a hospital floor while her daughter was very, very ill. So where would this country be without the different charities? So while, no, I wouldn't want chugging, at the same time, I understand how necessary it is to ask for money.
What about you, Marion, then? Like, I mean, have you considered that? Because you said earlier on, you turn no one away with a fundraising idea.
Yeah. But no, we don't turn people away with fundraising ideas. But we have a very small and limited budget, so we actually couldn't go to a company and employ them to send out people to do that. And also, are they going to actually understand what we're about? I've been doing this for 12 years. I'm the CEO. I do it on a voluntary basis myself. I know what it's like to ask people for money and to get out there and do it. I've been doing it for a very long time. And so I need to know that who's actually doing this and asking for money knows what the charity is about and what they're involved in. But I'm not doing it on the global scale that Goal is doing it. So they have a bigger budget. They have a different program. And I get what they're doing. But for the smaller charities like ours and possibly for Pieta House, it's a different way of doing things, because ours is much more personal and it's happening in Ireland, whereas what Aidan and Goal are trying to do is on a much more global basis, and they're dealing with countries that really need help now, this minute, when they have a disaster. So I get it why they're doing it. It's just not something that we get involved in. But I'm not saying, you know, don't do it. It's just, it doesn't suit us.
Okay, I mean, I want to go back to something that you talked about earlier on, Aidan. You were talking about, like, I mean, the Charities Act that's been brought in, or maybe it was Joan. Like, I mean, that kind of cleanup mechanism that's gone on. Like, in terms of the kind of like adhering to this as a charity, adhering to the regulations and the legislation of that Charity Act, like, how much more onerous has it been for you? Like, does it mean hiring in more people? Does it mean, like, mean paying? Like, what exactly does it mean, the Charities Act, for you at Pieta House?
Well, first of all, I don't know if it's with Marion and Aidan, but we have a subcommittee from the board who's ensuring that we are adhering to all the governance, you know, from the Charity Act. It is obviously much more work, but it's obviously much more necessary. And so that we can never have that terrible, disgraceful carry-on that went on nearly 2 years ago. So, and that's, it's reassuring for the public to know that rigor is taking place in all charities. I don't know what's happening with...
I mean, from our point of view, it's no greater because of the level of governance and accountability we already had to achieve in terms of our reporting to government. Mm-hmm. So it hasn't like we were already doing all the things that have been asked of us. But I can understand from some of the smaller charities where they had a volunteer accountant potentially just do the books, that they might now have to employ a full audit and pay the money for that. That seems unnecessary, but I can understand that it gets there. But no, Galway had already been doing it.
Final question, and thank you very much for your time as well, giving up your time at the Bank Holiday weekend to come along. Final question. You mentioned earlier on about 20,000 Irish charities. Apart from the people on the up here on the podium, what challenges do you admire and why?
Oh, can I answer that?
I love those too.
Because I actually think what Pieta has to do is just... And I genuinely mean that. I think, you know, I don't think there's any of us probably in this room who doesn't know somebody who has suffered in the way that they've had with families. I've been to funerals myself where their children have committed suicide. And to me, it's the most harrowing thing I've ever experienced and witnessed. And so I think what Joan has achieved with Pieta House over 9 years would be... to me, one of the best things. I'm not saying that what you do isn't amazing, but you asked me which charity I would be most impressed with, and I must say it's Pieta House.
I actually asked which charity not represented on the side. That's fine. I like that love there to Pieta House. That was very good.
Okay, then the Ronald McDonald House.
In terms of charity not represented here today.
Peter McVerry, trust for me. My first job in fundraising was in Dublin Simon Community, and I've always had a grow to sort that issue out, and again, it is actually mainly a mental health issue, homelessness. But we've got to know Peter McVerry Trust and the people working there with Goal, who run the Calcutta Run for the two charities. All the lawyers in the Law Society run the Calcutta Run for the two charities, and the people in there, Pat Doyle, CEO, just totally and utterly dedicated to the people they work with on a day-to-day basis, and again. You know, they're almost invisible to us, and it's just to remember the work that they do. It's a fantastic charity.
Okay. Vincent de Paul. If you think of the extraordinary work they do all year round, not just, you know, as I said earlier, at Christmas, but not just helping with financial needs, but offering that wonderful, loving support to families who are struggling. They get 5% from the government. They're just extraordinary. And if I wasn't working in Pieta House, I'd love to work with Vincent de Paul.
Mm-hmm. I seem to be doing this a lot today anyway, saying it's the last question. It's not the last question, actually, because it's like each of you have kind of like talked about the government involvement in the sector as well, or non-involvement in the sector, you know? I mean, do you kind of when you kind of go to government looking for funding, when you kind of approach them for kind of aid and help, do they... Are they kind of doing the poor mouth? Are they kind of saying, we've got no money? Is it coming down to that? Or, do they have a way of prioritising certain charities that you may not necessarily agree with?
Well, you know, we have to be realistic as well. We only do have a population of 4.5 million. So remember, the taxes coming from that has to be spread over so many things. They can't possibly fund every single charity, and we need to be realistic about that. But yes... I'm not sure if the way it's dispersed is the right way. For the first few years when Pieta House was opened, I mean, it's only in the last 3 years we've received anything, and we're 9 years old. So I think it's down to personalities, and I think it's down to how much of a pain in the neck you are, you know, going to them all the time. And that squeaky wheel bit, you know, eventually if you're still squeaking, they'll eventually want to get rid of you, and that's when they give you a few bob. But I think the dispersion of it needs to be looked at.
Okay. Would you agree with that, Aidan? Dispersion?
Irish Aid is our funder, one of our main funders, and in fairness to them, they have a very good system set up, and again, it's about impact, and they really monitor our impact and the way we're spending the money. So while we always want more, there's always need, and we're always hoping to get more. We have a very strong relationship with them, and they disperse it amongst a large number of Irish charities. So from my point of view, we have a good relationship. And again, asking the taxpayer to say we are going to send this money abroad you need to be sure that you can deliver the impact that you're doing. So we believe we've done well in persuading Irish Aid to maintain their budget within the constraints of the taxpayer. So we're happy, relatively speaking, with their response to us.
Okay,
and we're one of the charities that don't get any money, and we've never got any money from the HSE or from the government. But now, looking to build a 50-bedroom house at the new Children's Hospital, where we're looking to raise 10 million to do this. Yes, I will be back with my begging bowl and explaining to them that we can't do that without assistance. And I think at this stage, they're going to have to realise we've done this for 10 years. We'll probably be doing it for 15 years at Crumlin before we actually get to the new Children's Hospital. We will have done that without assistance and provided an excellent service for families when they needed it. And I think it will be time for them to give us a hand to build the house. We're happy to run it, but we definitely will need assistance with the building of it.
Okay, excellent. Thank you very much for your time. Thank you very much to Marion, thank you to Aidan, and thank you very much to Joan.
Thank you.
Many thanks to Aidan, Joan, and Marion for taking the time to join us at Banter, and thanks to Roz at Board Bia and her team for all their help with Banter at Bloom. This podcast was produced by Banter series producer Tanya White. You can check out thisisbanter.com for news we're up to at Banter. Plus, you can also listen back to all the Banter podcasts to date. Bloom 2016 takes place at the Phoenix Park, Dublin from June 2nd to 6th. And keep an eye on bloominthepark.com for more information. We'll be back next week with another podcast. Until then, goodbye and take care.